Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer, Chris Clements, and Dark Money, Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another episode of Light Beer, Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble.
And I'm Chris Clements.
And we get to talk about beer.
We get to live up to our namesake, Light Beer. Although the gentleman sitting next to us doesn't really produce a lot of
light beer. Well, that's fine.
We're really privileged to welcome a new friend of mine. We've known each other about a year now, I would say.
Yeah,
Jeff Cousins, of the recently multiple awarded Schilling Brewing Company in Littleton, New Hampshire.
Yeah. Nice to be here.
Thanks for being here.
Appreciate it.
Well, this is definitely the right time of year to be here rather than New Hampshire.
You know, we were sitting outside this morning. It was like 55 degrees. And Chris said, man, I need my jacket. I'm cold.
So I went to go pick him up at the hotel. I went to go pick him up at the hotel and he's sitting outside. I go, are you cold? Oh, I'm like, no, this is springtime in Littleton.
Oh, it's
so
July.
55 degrees.
July.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I'm a big fan of New Hampshire. We've gone there. I'm trying to think if we went. We didn't go last summer, but before that, we'd gone every summer for at least 5 or 6 years to Conway. Mm-hmm. Go hang out on the lake. We have a friend who has a place there.
That's a
great place to be.
Well, their brewery is located on this river in Littleton, and it's one of the most beautiful spots you'll ever see. And I've been blessed enough to be able to go there twice in the last year and hang out with Jeff and his brother Stu, who's probably listening to this podcast when it gets aired.
So hey, Stu.
Hello, Stu. And it's a family affair, which is what's so great about the beer industry. The beer industry is still a family affair, an industry that is dominated by family businesses.
Going back hundreds of years.
Yeah. And that's the way we're going
to
keep
still,
it.
And still proof why God loves us and wants us to be happy.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed, I think that every morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about your story, how you got started. You guys are relatively new in the scheme of the brewing industry.
Yeah, by German standards, by American craft beer standards, we're, you know, we should be on Geritol right now. You know, we're going into our 11th year.
Oh wow!
And so, yeah, we kind of came about this circuitously. I started off, you know, I had a career in national security and counterterrorism. You know, like you do before.
That's
you
a whole other podcast.
That's the perfect setup to be a brewer, right?
Well, that's what drove me to, you know, want to start my own brewery.
It's always the counter-terrorist experts who get bored. Right. And they decide that, hey, why don't I know what we'll do? We'll start a brewery.
There's a lot of work done on a bar napkin with a great lager in front of you.
Yeah.
Sure. But no, so we, you know, my best friend growing up, John Lanzini, and I we were tinkering around and during our undergraduate days, and he was brewing out of these big yellow buckets that, you know, were popular in your home brew kits back in whatever that was, 1994, 1995. And we thought, you know, John, you're pretty good at this. I mean, your red ale isn't, you know, it's about a 4.5 out of 10. There's promise here.
Right.
And, you know, John went on. He's a chemist by training now, just a brilliant guy. And he and I kind of nurtured that dream of brewing together over about 10 years. And fast forward to, when was it, 2006, John had been living in Salzburg, Austria with his family. And I convinced him to come over and move back to New England, where my family and I were living at the time. And John and I started to do a little bit of demographic research about where a great spot for a brewery would be. We pulled in my middle brother, Matt, who was living in northern Michigan.
Yeah.
And then my youngest brother, Stuart, who was over in Scotland with his family. And we said, you know what? Now is the time. If we're going to do this thing, let's jump off the cliff without a parachute, so to speak. Let's start this brewery. So in 2013, we opened our doors and we set out with a pretty singular focus to make world-class European-inspired lagers. And that's what we do.
Which for the industry at the time, which was awash in IPAs, was really different.
Very much so. Yeah, we had people coming into the brewery, taking a look around and saying, you know what? You guys will be here for maybe 6 to 8 months, and then you're done. And, you know, we stuck to our guns.
Yeah, for our listeners, I mean, who maybe don't know, back in that day, it was all about IPAs. I mean, everything was about IPAs or really, really heavy, heavy, high-octane beers. And that's completely changed now in many ways.
Hugely changed.
It's all about sessionability. It's all about drinkability. Imagine that. It's all about, you know, not just having one beer and then switching to a, you know, maybe a bigger beer.
Right. Well, it's that whole thing where you look across the pond and you see what the Germans and the Austrians have done. And my goodness, they have this magical thing called lagers and pale lagers. And it can sit there humbly on the table and take a backseat to food and conversation, still be great to drink on their own. But, you know, this is about, it's not just about drinking. It's about drinking in culture, drinking in family, drinking in an experience. And we think these styles of beers really lend themselves to that. And that's why we based our business on it.
And most of your ingredients are imported. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, we actually have a number of lagers that we brew with local regional grains. We have a number of different regional maltsters that we use. But they, you know, they can't supply us at the volume that we would want as a 10,000-barrel brewery, which is still a small brewery by any standard. But it's it's definitely a mid-size American craft brewery now. But yeah, we import a lot of our grain from a place over in Bamberg, Germany, and they make what we think is some of the best malts in the world.
Well, for a small little brewery in Littleton, New Hampshire, you guys just won a bunch of awards from Untappd.
Yeah.
Nine beers placed in the top-ranked beers in the United States.
Wow.
As well as 57 metal beers in our home state of New Hampshire. I'm reading off your post on X, formerly known as Twitter. But this is amazing. For a small little brewery in Littleton, you guys are making your mark. And in a way that's really authentic, I would think.
You know, it's a testament, I think, to a couple of things. It's a testament to the team that we have in place. I mean, these people are really serious about their craft. And that's the only way to be in any profession. You know, we have a values-based business. And the aspiration to always be world-class in what we do is at the top of that list of values. Doesn't mean you always attain it, but that's the goal. And you know, there's no sense of do you buy in or do you not buy in the business. Everybody is bought into that mission. And you see it in the product. And we're so fortunate. And, you know, we're so fortunate that we're brewing at a time when people enjoy these styles of beer now. And just like they have for a couple hundred years over in continental Europe, in places like the Czech Republic and Germany and Austria and whatnot. But now they're starting to get it, I think, in the American drinking public. It's like, you know what? We like these lower gravity, lower alcohol by volume lagers, and they go great with so many styles. And the awards that we won, yeah, it's a really nice testament, I think, to a changing industry. It's a testament to our team's hard work. And we're just fortunate. God has really blessed us to be in this, you know, at this time and in this place and this type of market.
That's amazing.
What was the reasoning for New Hampshire and Littleton?
So I'm originally from Traverse City, Michigan. And when my wife and I were living in D.C. and working out of D.C., we thought, man, I can't wait to get the heck out of here. And
actually, that's everybody.
You know, it is. And raise our kids in a place that was similar to where we grew up. You know, I love hunting and fishing and hiking and all that and skiing. The kids love winter sports. And we thought, man, wouldn't it be cool to actually be able to live in a place where I could still continue to work down in D.C., but then when you're home, you know? And so we were fortunate to find ourselves in a place where we could move out of the Beltway. My wife Monica's folks had a camp up in the White Mountains. We would go and visit them. And I thought, this is the spot. And so the rest is history.
That's awesome. Yeah. You know, there's actually, it's not uncommon. New Hampshire is one of those places that, well, because it's not Massachusetts.
nope, it's not.
The people go and they basically commute. They'll live in New Hampshire and work out of the D.C. area. So it's a pretty common pretty common thing.
Yeah, they have a number of flights right in D.C.
Yeah.
I found that out last summer. Now, the other interesting part about your history, you mentioned your brother Stu, is that Stu is, you can almost call him Pastor Stu.
Yeah.
In some ways. Because, I mean, you were in counterintelligence and he was in seminary.
Yeah, Stu is a multi-talented guru of sorts. Yeah. He is the, you know, I'm excited for him to listen to this podcast, Stu. It's going to be good. But Stu's a different beast. He's a brilliant guy who has two different master's degrees, seminary-based master's degrees, and was about to do a PhD in theological ethics
at Aberdeen.
And then he realized that most people with that degree were moonlighting at Wendy's to actually pay their bills, and not to diminish in any way, shape, or form that pursuit. But he said, you know, I don't know if I want to do that. And so he, you know, obviously as people of faith, we benefit from his education, but now he can pay his bills.
Now he can pay his bills.
Grateful he's not living in my basement.
Yeah, with his kids. That would be a bad thing. But you mentioned faith, which is one of the pillars of our podcast, and you guys have been that guiding force in how you've run the business for these 11 years. And how does that play a part in, you know, your everyday lives within the business, and how do those values then translate to the product?
Right. Well, it's a great question, and I think the starting point for any business is understanding yourself. And really being able to differentiate yourself, know what your identity is based in. And as Christians, this is our identity. But from that flow a certain value set, you know, working hard, smiling in the face of adversity, hoping, you know, knowing that we're going to have a better day, pursuing excellence in the things that we do, treating others as we would like to be treated. These are all central values to our business, and those all do come from our faith. And we hope that we emulate and embody those values, not just on paper, but as people in this industry. We don't always do it successfully, but, you know, that is our goal. That is our mission. And so, you know, when you talk about a tangible way that your faith is reflected in your work, those values guide our investments. They guide our strategy, and that's where our money is. So
I would imagine, I mean, in the craft space, that's a really unique philosophy to have.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we have friends from all across the spectrum, you know, from a faith basis, from a political basis, from a social basis. And, you know, that's part of the rich fabric of this industry. And I love that. I love engaging with people that think and believe very differently than I do.
Yeah.
We don't have an opportunity to talk very much about our personal faith. So I really welcome this conversation.
Yeah. But you have some different beers that kind of are reflective of that. You have one beer called Jacobus.
Yeah.
Tell us about that beer and the making of that beer and who inspired that beer.
That's so funny that you talk about that. I was actually texting with my friend Jacobus.
Jacobus. I knew I would screw that
That's
up.
That's all right. And Jacobus is
Jacobus. First of all, tell us about the beer.
It's a German style Pilsner. It's dry out with Hallertau Blanc and Mittelfrüh. And Saphir, and it is a really, really drinkable Pilsner.
Yeah.
It's something that pairs great with spicy food, pairs great by itself, pairs great with a baseball game. And so it's a beer that we developed last year, but it's something that is, it's a beer that's named after my friend who is a Catholic priest over in the mountains in Austria. And we got to know him pretty well. I first met him when he was blessing the beer at our friends at Eggenberger Brewery in just outside of Salzburg.
Oh, yeah.
And he was over there giving a mass at the brewery, which is also something you would never see in American craft beer. So I got to know him, and Stu and I spent many hours drinking some beers and talking with Jacobus, and we thought, my word, what a great name for a German style Pilsner. And so Jacobus it is. And he uh, He's pretty geek that he has a beer named
the
after.
Beer that
I'll
is.
Yeah, yeah, I'll tell you that.
I'll bet he is. So,
it's fun.
Jacobus. See, I knew I would mess it up. But yes, it's the beer that is blessed.
For sure. Oh, it is. It is. Fantastic. There are a few of them, but yeah.
What do you see, like, the beer industry obviously in the last year has had a lot of upheaval, a lot of turmoil, especially with some of the larger brewers, you know, Bud Light, mm-hmm. jumped the shark, so to speak, and Anheuser-Busch, and their wholesalers have really suffered from that. You know, where do you see the beer industry going in the next couple of years? What role do you see the craft industry playing? There's been a lot of talk about that craft has, you know, seen its best days, you know, and I get asked my opinion a lot, and I've been thinking that there's going to be some kind of bubble at some point within the industry, because there's so many craft suppliers right now, and I still maintain only about 20% really, and I would include Chilling in that, really know what they're doing, and the other 80%. Is they're not brewing really great beer. They're not doing great things. It's just whatever they're doing it. Mm-hmm. So I'd appreciate your perspective on, you know, the future of the industry, you know, given your brief but storied, you know, history in it.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a question we really look at every single day. And I think what you find is that any industry like this, and I kind of liken it to the dot-com industry a little bit. You have a lot of young people that really don't have a lot of business experience or life experience that happen to make decent beer or something they think people will enjoy. And so they get together, maybe with their friends, maybe their family, and they put these businesses together. And, you know, gee, there's a lot of public interest initially. And then they go through some turbulence, like we saw with the pandemic, or with the rapidity in which styles and preferences change. I mean, it's borderline psychotic.
Yeah.
If your business is set up just to chase trends and you're constantly knee-jerking and you have no groundedness, you have no sense of who you are, what your mission is, you know, you're going to be blown by every strong breeze within the market that comes up. And I think a lot of people in the craft industry have gotten to this point where they're fatigued. The owners are fatigued. The brewers themselves are fatigued. And let's be honest, in most cases, you're really not making much money.
Yeah.
You know, running these breweries, it's incredibly capitally intensive to start. You know, steel now is, three times probably what it was when we built our large production system. That investment you could tack on $2 or $3 million from what we spent back in 2017. So people are just finding it's ingredients are more expensive. You have a labor shortage across the country. You have a lot of people, frankly, that it's hard to see a reflection of your work ethic as an owner or as a head brewer in some of these folks that come into the industry. And so I think that contributes to fatigue. Mm. And so I think what we're going to see is unfortunately, a number of these small businesses, they are going out of business and they will continue to go out of business. And we're seeing maybe a consolidation of more successful breweries around simpler classic styles. You're not really seeing as many of the insanely fruited sours or the big adjunct stouts. You have some breweries that make them very, very well, some friends of ours in the industry. But I think those will be exceptions down the road. It's those that have really run their business well and really understand their place in the industry that will weather the storm and come out the other side.
Yeah, that's probably true in any industry.
Absolutely.
Know what your core competencies are and grow them.
Yeah, it's no different than any other business. It really isn't, Chris. I mean, it's about, you know, how do you conduct yourself as a person? How do you strategize? Do you have somebody that has a good financial sense, you know, to support a vision that makes sense for a market? I mean, it's not that hard,
yeah,
but it's also very hard at the same time.
Yeah, don't get too far over your skis.
Big point right there.
Yeah, it's easy to do.
I feel like it is hard. It's probably not that complicated, but it's very difficult because it's a grind, right? I mean, you just have to plow in and out every single day, and not like you said, I love the way you said it, that if you have a foundation, you know what your values are, you know what your consistency is, then you're going to weather the storms, whereas a lot of guys that just they topple over.
It's so true. I mean, you really have to know what, you know, you have to be your authentic self in this market. And when you get away from that, you know, and I don't care what style of beer you've predicated your business on. If you're not your authentic self, you will fail in this business. I mean, yeah. it may be 3 or 4 years and you're just, you know, you're living off gas basically, but you're going to find it very challenging if you're continually knee jerking. And you know, very few people have the energy to chase trends at the velocity that we see brewers chasing trends today.
Well, the big brewers for sure are chasing whatever trend they can get right. their hands on.
But as a small guy.
But a small guy, you're just wasting money and wasting time because you're sacrificing what you're saying, your identity.
Right, you are. I'm not saying you can't.
And what got you to the marketplace.
I'm not saying you shouldn't be flexible.
No.
But you know, you got to know what you do and do it well.
Yeah, and what you've captured with Schilling is a style and a branding and a authenticity that probably was really lacking in the industry at the time, and so you hooked it.
You know, I'll be honest,
and you haven't moved away from it.
It really just came down to us doing what we enjoy, you know, brewing beers that we enjoy drinking, and running a business the way that we believe a business should be run. And again, we're not perfect at any of these things, but it wasn't an intentional thing. It's like, hey, this is how we need to run this business. You have to remember that it at its core, while you're making a product, it's also a people business.
Yeah,
you know, and you've got to create a great experience for people to come in and drink your beer and eat your food. You need to pair food wisely with your beers. You need to create an environment that's aesthetically pleasing, that is unique. You know, there's a lot of components to that, but
there's nothing more unique than sitting at Schilling and watching that river run and looking at the fishermen on top of these rocks, casting their lines out, and you're sipping, you know.
I often imagine myself.
Alexander.
I imagine myself being one of those almost every day.
you are that. Well, thank you so much for being here and giving us a little light on your family and your history and the great things you're doing in the industry, which, you know, in the era of brewer consolidation, and also, you know, one thing that you saw probably 10 years ago as well is, you know, the big brewers were buying everybody up and everyone saw dollar signs. Mm-hmm. But that was really short-lived as well. And most of those beers now, what's really sad, where are they now?
Right.
Yeah, really, I mean, they got their check, but their own visions, I would say, their own reason for being went away.
Well, you know, you typically don't start a successful business in this industry with the idea that you're going to sell in a couple of years. That is for sure.
Yeah.
And so anybody that did that, I think, had a rude awakening, and you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I look forward to drinking another Alexander with you soon.
Yeah.
And you too.
I'll get out there.
Can't wait.
Got to get out there.
Yeah. Next time we're doing our DC trip.
Yeah. Shoot up there.
For sure.
Love it. Guys, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure.
And where can they find the brewery? What's the, got a website?
Yeah. So the best place to go is Instagram at Schilling Beer Co. And that's Schilling Beer Co.
Okay.
Right. Great.
Great.
Well, it's too bad you didn't have any samples.
We could have had some beer
for breakfast.
Hey, we're not in Germany.
That's right.
But thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thanks.
Thanks.
God bless.
See ya.